The headlines: Palestinian media say Israeli forces have arrested several family members of six Palestinian inmates who managed to escape an Israeli jail on Monday. Meanwhile, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip celebrate the escape of the inmates from Israel's Gilboa prison. And a powerful earthquake hit southwestern Mexico near the beach resort of Acapulco, leaving at least one person dead. Hello and welcome, everybody, to our top story for this half hour. Palestinian media say Israeli forces have arrested family members of the Palestinian inmates who escaped the regime's Gilboa prison earlier this week. Reports say Israeli forces stormed the houses of the six prisoners as cellmates tunneled out of one of Israel's highest security prisons on Monday. The move was the first such jailbreak in decades in Gilboa prison's history. Israel launched a massive manhunt to arrest the six afterward. The regime set up roadblocks and deployed surveillance vehicles to aid its search. Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah called the breakout a grave failure for Israeli security agencies. Palestinian groups also hailed the incident as a slap in the face of the Israeli regime. Our Ramallah correspondent Mona Kandil says Israeli troops have used threats and force against the relatives of the escaped Palestinian prisoners to get information about their whereabouts.
Up till the moment, Israeli forces are still carrying out the manhunt in search of those Palestinian prisoners, those six heroes, according to the Palestinians, who succeeded to escape from Gilboa prison, north of the lands occupied in 1948. This morning, Israeli forces raided Jenin in northern the occupied West Bank. They raided the town of Yabad and Arabi, arrested a number of the relatives of those six, arrested the father of Yaqub Fiad, as well as brother of Mahmoud Arda, and Qasim Arda, the brother of Muhammad Arda. And several hours later, they released the father of Fiad. However, they threatened him in case he knew anything about his son and he didn't inform the Israeli authorities or the Israeli military, then they will again storm the town, and they will not only arrest him, however, they will arrest all his family members, and said in case his son did not surrender to the Israeli forces, then the Israeli soldiers would be killing him at the end of the day.
Palestinian groups in the Gaza Strip have hailed six prisoners who managed to escape from an Israeli jail in northeast of Al-Quds on Monday. For Palestinians, a prison break is considered as a slap in the face of the Israeli regime and its military. Ruba Shabat has more in this report from Gaza.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have celebrated the escape of six Palestinian inmates from Israeli maximum security Gilboa prison in north of the occupied territories through a tunnel dug in the floor. Palestinians hailed the heroic operation and handed out candies to celebrate what they call a heroic move. Palestinian factions consider the escape as a slap in the face of the Israeli regime.
This operation is a great victory for our Palestinian prisoners, the resistance, and our Palestinian people. What happened in Gilboa prison is unique. Our inmates grabbed their freedom by themselves, leaving the Israeli security defeated and confused. We are celebrating this victory as we call on all Palestinians to provide safety for those inmates.
Prisoners' groups said four of the inmates were serving life sentences. Another man was held under a special detention order, and the sixth was awaiting a verdict. Five of them belong to the Islamic Jihad movement, and one is a former commander in Fatah Party.
This escape has damaged the image of the Israeli regime before the world. It is such a great victory for Palestinians. We warn the Israeli regime against doing any action that puts the lives of those heroes at risk.
Palestinian resistance movements emphasized that the struggle for freedom with the Israeli occupation persists both behind bars and outside.
This is the biggest prison break in the history of the Palestinian cause, and it's going to be a remarkable incident in history. As Palestinian resistance, we hail these inmates' efforts of grabbing back their freedom and breaking the Israeli chains. We warn Israel not to hurt those prisoners, or else this will cost the Israeli regime a lot.
Palestinians have praised the heroic escape of the Palestinian inmates, describing it a blow to the Israeli regime and its security. They also stressed that the resistance is the only way to defend their rights and liberate their lands. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
The Taliban have announced key ministers of a caretaker government in Afghanistan 3 weeks after taking over the country, including the capital, Kabul. In a press conference, Zabihullah Mujahid said Hassan Akhund has been appointed acting prime minister, while Taliban co-founder Mullah Abdul Ghani Baradar will be the acting deputy premier. He said Sarojuddin Haqqani has been appointed acting interior minister. The spokesman added Amir Khan Mottari has been named acting foreign minister. Mullah Yaqub will serve as acting defense minister in the new government. Mujahid said other ministers of the caretaker government will be announced in due course. Several of the appointees are in the UN and U.S. sanctions list. Political commentator Brian Downing says the Taliban never expected to take over Kabul, adding that the group has a hard time to transform into a centralized government.
I don't think the Taliban expected to take Kabul this quickly. I think even the Taliban people have admitted, those in Kabul say that they really wanted some sort of government in Kabul to negotiate with, to keep foreign aid coming in, and to negotiate some sort of interim government, which they would dominate, of course, but they really weren't prepared for this. Now what they have to do is they have to go from a decentralized military movement. You know, they had provincial commanders and district commanders, and they had this council that had all sorts of factions. Now they have to become a centralized government over a population that is very poor. They're not very welcome of Pashtun rule. They never really supported the Taliban. They just found it somewhat less objectionable than the Karzai and the Ghani governments.
The Taliban say their newly appointed government in Afghanistan will uphold, quote, Sharia law in all matters of governance and life. In his first message since the group rose to power, Taliban leader Hibatullah Akhundzada said the new government will start functioning at the earliest. He said the group is committed to all international laws, treaties, and commitments which are not in conflict with Islamic law. Akhundzada pledged that the new leadership would ensure lasting peace, prosperity, and development in the country. He also called on Afghans not to leave the country. The Taliban say they've taken full control of Panjshir province, where the group is fighting against the forces of the National Resistance Front led by Ahmad Massoud. However, Massoud has dismissed the announcement by the Taliban, saying his forces still hold strategic areas of Panjshir Valley. Amin Alami has a report on that.
The Taliban spokesman has declared the collapse of Panjshir Valley in the north of Kabul. Zabihullah Mujahid says the war is over in Afghanistan and that there is no anti-Taliban resistance in the country, except by Daesh.
The war is ended all over Afghanistan after successfully capturing Panjshir province as the last stronghold for the ousted enemy. The Islamic Emirate forces have active presence in the valley.
However, the leader of National Resistance Front says he is in Panjshir and that his forces are deployed across the strategic areas of the valley. According to Massoud, the resistance will push ahead with its fight on the Taliban until victory is achieved. In an audio message, Massoud called on all Afghans to come together and stand against the Taliban.
I call on all my countrymen inside and abroad to launch a national uprising to defend our dignity, independence, and freedom. I also call on the international community to be aware that the Taliban has never changed.
The leader of National Resistance Front also slammed the Taliban for what he called defying the demand of a top delegation of religious scholars to engage in talks to resolve the conflict in Panjshir. He also accused Pakistan of directly invading Afghanistan, saying the Pakistani military used drones to bomb Panjshir to help the Taliban.
Ahmed Massoud's claim on the Pakistani military interference in Panjshir has complicated the situation. On Monday, the Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman was asked about the reports of Pakistani airstrikes. The spokesman said Iran condemns all foreign interference in Afghanistan without specifying any country. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
A powerful earthquake has struck southwestern Mexico, leaving at least one person dead so far. The magnitude 7 quake caused rockfalls and damage to buildings. It also did damage to Acapulco. The tremor caused widespread power outages in several states. The Mexican State Power Utility said the quake affected some 1.6 million users across the country. The Mexican National Seismological Service said the epicenter was 14 kilometers southeast of the beach resort of Acapulco. A massive earthquake struck the Mexican capital in 1985, killing thousands of people. In the United States, the number of deaths from the novel coronavirus has surpassed a grim milestone of 650,000. The figure is based on data from the Johns Hopkins University. The U.S. has recorded more than 40.2 million COVID-19 cases since the beginning of the pandemic. The country is the worst hit by the pandemic in terms of both infections and fatalities. Elsewhere in the Americas, Mexico logged nearly 1,100 new deaths, raising its overall death toll close to 265,000. The country also registered nearly 16,000 new cases. The World Health Organization has criticized wealthy nations for hoarding COVID-19 vaccines and treatments.
The developed world and the industrialized world just doesn't seem to get it. It really doesn't. It talks, the rhetoric is fine, it's all about sharing, it's all about fairness, but in reality, when push comes to shove and these products are available, they are hoarded in countries and they are not shared.
The criticism came at a Q&A session attended by the WHO's top epidemiologists. They described hoarding as an immoral and unfair practice that's prolonging the pandemic. The UN Health Agency has set a target for countries to vaccinate at least 10% of their population by the end of this month. It has called on wealthier nations to halt booster vaccine shots to help poorer countries meet the target. According to the UN, nearly 60% of the population of the European Union has been fully inoculated. In contrast, Africa has only vaccinated 3% of its population. A new poll shows that Americans have become warier about intrusive government spying in the name of national security. A poll conducted by the Associated Press found that about two-thirds of Americans are opposed to the possibility of warrantless monitoring of telephone calls, emails, and text messages made within the country. According to the poll, about half are opposed to government monitoring of internet searches, including those by U.S. sanctions without a warrant. The survey shows that Americans were less concerned about government surveillance more than 20 years ago, when the U.S. started so-called war on terror by invading Afghanistan and later Iraq. Past revelations regarding the widespread monitoring of U.S. people on social media has made the public distrustful of the authorities.
We have Julian Assange, we have Cambridge Analytica when it comes to Facebook, and we have just a general distrust of each other in general as we face a polarized nation which is split behind political ideological lines. So if you factor all of these things in, and many more which I have not named, you start to make more sense off of why more people feel more distrustful of the government. We also have to remember that we had a former president who also talked a lot about fake news, and we looked at just how different types of misinformation and disinformation are feeding into the cultural ethos of the country. And when you look at just some of the failures of our U.S. intelligence system, more people are saying, well, we're not so trustful of the systems that we've traditionally had a lot of faith and confidence in the past. Not only that, we're more reliant on digital services. We're using our computers more. We're using smart speakers more. I even failed to say the name because I know it will alert one in my house right now if I say that special call word that has been heavily commercialized. That's because we all, or many of us, have these digital systems, smart speakers, that are already entrenched in our daily lives. And for have to have the government further build upon that, it seems a lot more threatening, and people are a lot more distrustful.
NATO has accused Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran of breaking international rules with respect to arms control. Critics, however, have pointed out to the 30-nation alliance hypocrisy given its conduct in nations such as Afghanistan. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
NATO has just concluded its 17th annual arms control conference with harsh criticism directed towards authorities in Moscow, Beijing, Pyongyang, and Tehran. NATO, led by the United States, continues to spend billions on military hardware, but clearly does not like it when nations outside the alliance develop their own defense capabilities.
There are also other players fielding nuclear weapons and advanced missile systems. North Korea and Iran, for example, are blatantly ignoring or breaking the global rules.
Iran has always stressed its nuclear program is purely peaceful. In fact, Tehran did all in its power to reassure the international community by signing up to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action in 2015. It was the United States under Donald Trump that illegally withdrew from that nuclear accord. Stoltenberg failed to mention this once during his speech. In any case, experts say NATO is not in a position to point the finger. There are significant divisions within the 30-nation alliance. Its credibility is currently at rock bottom, critics argue, following its 20-year-long mission in Afghanistan.
The European member states of NATO will need to come up with real arguments to demonstrate that NATO makes values. You need to demonstrate the return on investment.
The head of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, concluded his address to the Arms Control Conference with these words.
You can count on NATO's commitment to security and stability.
That statement will likely cut to the bone for any Afghan citizen able to hear it. Anti-war campaigners say the destruction NATO countries brought to Afghanistan during the past two decades cannot be put into words. And now those Afghan civilians who somehow managed to survive have no idea what the future holds. Jerome Hughes at NATO headquarters, Brussels.
And that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Covering Islam.
Is God just? The question seems absurd, since the instinctive intellect of every believer believes in a just God. However, when the question is matched with the issue of the eternal and all-encompassing knowledge of God, the things get a bit complicated. Usually, predestination and determinism are two upshots drawn from the eternal knowledge of God. However, is that the case? Would the eternal knowledge of God imply predestination? If that is the case, how would man be accountable for what they do? How could God's all-encompassing power and knowledge exist side by side with human free will. There's no question that God's knowledge cannot be contained in time. He knows everything from the pre-eternity to the post-eternity. If God knows everything, then he knows what we are going to do in this world. Consequently, he knows who's going to go to heaven or hell before they are even born. But doesn't that mean that we are doomed before we are born and our actions are predetermined in a preordained fate? And if that is the case, what is our fault or merit? And more importantly, if people are predestined to their faults or merits before the foundation of the world, where is justice?
One of the most heated and contentious debates in the history of Muslim theology was on the question of fatalism, jabr, and free will. Okay, whether we have the capacity to act of our own accord. And this led to a diversity of opinion amongst the early Muslims and through the formation of theological schools.
People sometimes think that if God has unlimited power, that negates the concept of free will. And certainly free will is something that people have a very difficult time reconciling with the idea of a God that exists and controls everything.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's eternal knowledge, he has made the destiny for each and everything which he has created, and that is going to play out during the existence and during the time we are in this realm. However, that does not mean that we don't have free will. We do have free will, and that is what we're going to be rewarded for and punished and held accountable for on the Day of Judgment. Otherwise, the meaning of Day of Judgment would be futile, that Allah has forced us to do something and then he's playing out a scene in court and holding people guilty for some and free of guilt for others.
If we think of God as a just God, and we think of a God that is going to judge individuals on their actions on the Day of Judgment, it's not really consistent with the concept of a just God to think that God will judge us on actions that we aren't responsible for. So this must mean that we have free will and we are accountable for whatever decisions we make, for whatever actions we take in our lives.
There are many things which are predetermined in this world, which we may call fate, such as our place of birth, our parents, our physical construction, our inborn skills, and the environment in which we are born. We cannot determine these elements, therefore we are not responsible for them.
Fate is destiny, what we normally use in our language, and that is how one is going to play out one's life and the choices one makes and the consequences. Somewhat, even though it's been written and determined by God, but each and every human being has a free will, and we have the opportunity to make those choices. We have the responsibility of the consequences of the choices we make.
There are two kinds of fate. We cannot choose to be born in the family we want to be born. We cannot choose our father and mother. We cannot choose the function of our body. Blood has to flow in our body. I cannot control that. I cannot go on top of a cliff and throw myself and say that if I'm supposed to die, I will die, and if I'm not supposed to die, I will survive. God has given us intellect and reasoning to not deliberately put and lead ourselves into a situation that may kill us and harm us. There's quite a bit of the fate which is in our control. Whilst destiny, we understand, has been written down and determined by God, because it's part of our belief. آمنتُ بِاللَّهِ وَمَلَائِكَتِهِ وَكُتُبِهِ وَرُسُلِهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ وَالْقَدْرِ خَيْرِهِ وَشَرِّهِ مِنَ اللَّهِ تَعَالَى وَالْبَعْثِ بَعْدَ الْمَوْتِ. That the destiny, the good and the bad, is from Allah, but He has given us control over many aspects of it.
In Islamic theology, fate or predisposition is dissolved into two concepts of qada and qadar. Qadar means calculation and measurement. According to the Quran, inna kulla shay'in khalaqnahu biqadar. Indeed, we have created everything with measure and calculation. Qada is the implementation of that calculation and measurement in creation. Therefore, for every qadar to materialize, we need a qada. Or in other words, every qada is preceded by a qadar.
Everything in this world, from the galaxies to the particles of atoms, from the numbers to the characteristics of elements, from different categories of plants and animals, the formation of the human fetus in the womb, they all testify to the existence of qadar.
But what about human actions? Are they also predetermined and pre-measured by qadar? If we say they are, then we end up in predestination and injustice. And if we say they are not, although we have opted for justice, but we have belittled the power and knowledge of God.
People are predestined because God doesn't need the time factor. He doesn't wait for the year to pass to see how well you're going to conduct yourself with your mother or with your wife, or are you going to abuse your power in the new post or not. We need to wait for that to see, but He doesn't. Having said that, if you ask the average human being, do you have the will to choose the right from wrong? They will say yes. So let's just bear in mind the rational conclusion about how did we reach the conclusion of God. It will help us understand these concepts. He's independent, He's not matter. He doesn't need time and movement. He sees the world, if it's difficult to imagine, the past, today and the present, at the same, if I may use the word, at the same time. For us, it's different. But let's go back to our inner self. We can't choose right from wrong, but He's in charge.
But it is still difficult to reconcile between these two concepts. An omnipotent and omniscient God, whose knowledge cannot be bound in time, and nothing happens without His leave, and a human being endowed with free will who can determine his destiny by his own free choice. It is at this critical crossroads that the two major theological schools of Ash'arism and Mu'tazilism in the Sunni theology break apart from each other. The Ash'arites dislike to curb the power and knowledge of God, while the Mu'tazilites prefer a just God over an all-powerful one.
Ash'arites do not believe that they believe in an unjust God. Rather, they twist the meaning of justice. There's no disagreement among theologians that God is just. The disagreement is in the way they define justice.
the Mu'tazilites argue that the meaning of justice cannot be different for us and for God. God has endowed the spirit of justice in human soul. Justice has a clear set of intelligible criteria that could be grasped by human intellect, and based on that, we can judge whether God's acts are just or not.
The Mu'tazili, or the Mu'tazilite school, was on the position, or on the side of the argument, which suggested that man is free to act, and there's a delegation of God's authority and capacity to humankind, and that because of their emphasis on justice, with the Mu'tazili tradition, that man is accountable for his actions, and man is the actor in his actions.
Therefore, if something is against the standards of justice, it cannot be issued from God. We cannot attribute to God acts which carry inherent evil in them. Divine predestination is not only incompatible with human responsibility, it also goes against God's justice. The Mu'tazilites believe that the overwhelming verses of the Quran negate the idea of predestination. Whosoever wishes, let him believe, and whosoever wishes, let him disbelieve. There is no compulsion in religion. Truth stands out clearly from error. Indeed, God does not do injustice to the people in any way, but the people do injustice to themselves. Or whoever does good does so for his own self. Whoever does evil does so against his self. Your Lord does not do injustice to the servants. However, the Ash'arites refer to certain other verses to support their point. God has created you, and whatever you do, or what you do not wish, unless it's wished by God. No affliction visits the earth or yourself, but it is in a book before we bring it about. And other similar verses there.
The Quran condones the Asharite position and the Mu'tazilite position. How amazing is that? Two conflicting positions, and the Quran gives equal weight to both of them, because both of these theologies are based upon, their justifications are based upon support from the Quranic verses. The accurate position is between the two. There is free will and there is destiny. The fifth Imam, the sixth Imam, they both asserted that. The reason why they asserted that was because there is no absolute free will and there is no absolute destiny.
The sixth Shiite Imam, Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, was asked about the question of free will and predestination. He answered, لا جبر ولا تفويض بل أمر بين الأمرين. It is neither compulsion nor total delegation, but it is something in between. It means that human being is neither totally compelled to what they do in this world, nor the creation of their evil or good acts are delegated to them. Rather, the reality lies somewhere in between the two. But where is that middle point? First of all, the fact that we have power to will freely is the will of God. It is He who has given us this power. وَمَا تَشَاءُونَ إِلَّا أَنْ يَشَاءَ اللَّهُ. You cannot wish unless it's wished by God. Secondly, after we make a will to do something, we have to use things at our disposal to realize it. And all those things including our body limbs, act by the power of God. So both the will and the act are made by the will and power of God. In a simple expression, He empowers us to do things using His power and our will. If our will goes against His measures, then it would never be realized. But if our will matches His measures, then the qada or decree will pass and the act is completed.
In terms of free will being inconsistent with the concept of an all-controlling, omnipotent God, free will is the creation of God, and to say that God cannot create free will is to limit God's power. Anyone who says that God cannot create free will has immediately placed a limit on the power of God and has failed to understand God as the omnipotent being.
This can be brought closer to imagination by the example of a person who is given a choice to use a lift in a skyscraper. What the free will of the person does is only decide which button to push and then push it. The lift does not work with that person's free will and power, but it works based on certain physical and mechanical laws. So the person does not go to the top floor or to the bottom floor with his own power. Nevertheless, he is the one to decide where the lift will go with his own free will.
Humankind is unequivocally described in the Quran as being responsible for his actions. Of course, the scope of our action is limited, as we see in the tradition attributed to Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, where somebody, one of his companions, will try to understand where is the scope of action and is there limits to the scope of action. He said, of course there's limits to the scope of action. He says, can you lift your leg? Yes, I can lift my leg. Can you lift your other leg? No, I can't lift my other leg. So yes, there is freedom to act. Okay, but that freedom is within a limited scope as given to us by God. And that freedom to act is absolutely dependent on the only independent, which is God.
There is a marked difference between a person slipping on a banana peel that he does not see on the floor, and a person volitionally and willfully jumping from on top of the roof to their death. There is a difference. In one situation, he did not have any control. In the other situation, the subject had intention and control. So we can see there's an obvious conflict. Now, the way the philosophers respond to this is, which is a part of the response, is that they talk about the vertical scheme of the will of God and human will coming together.
The question remains though, if God's knowledge is beyond time, then why would he create those who may end up in hell? The answer is simple. It is only through putting our free will in practice in this world that we can achieve paradise. Going through this stage and living a certain amount of time in this world is part of the process of our creation.
The eternal knowledge of God does not make this process invalid. The fact that we know a seed would grow into a tree does not mean that it doesn't need to grow anymore as we know it already. If we have a plan to construct a machine or a building, it doesn't mean the machine or the building does not need to be constructed because we already have the plan.
Always people say, why didn't he create a perfect world? He has already a perfect world called the world of the angels. They are perfect, they all act in accordance with his will, they're all intelligent, they choose, they have free will, but there's a stage closer to him, and that's us. Unfortunately, the dynamics of having the choice between intelligence and desires is that some people will choose the wrong option, the wrong decision. You can't escape that. He has given them the opportunity. They're fully informed. And let's be reassured that no one will be punished on the basis of ignorance.
If you look from one angle only, it's absolute destiny, predestination. If you look at it from another angle, it's absolute free will. And if you look at it as a whole, free will's other face is determinism, and determinism's other face is free will.
The sixth Imam Ja'far Sadiq alayhi salam has said, people with regards to destiny are of three categories. The first are those who assume that God has given full authority to man. These have weakened God in his kingdom. The second are those who assume that God has forced people to sin and then has held them responsible over things that they have no power over. These are unfair to God in his judgment. The third are those who assume God has held people responsible for what they do and does not hold them responsible for what they have no power over. These are the guided ones.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed
you shall not worship anyone except him. And he has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh and welcome to IRIB English Radio and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are still looking at the topic of corruption because we said it simply undermines the rights of others or takes the rights of other people in simple terms. When I, you, and everyone else deals in corruption, that means the rights of others are being taken in a way or another. We mentioned a few examples, and as we go on, the picture, inshallah, will become a lot clearer. If you haven't listened to the previous episodes, I do suggest that you do, so you would have a clear image of what we're trying to achieve here. As a child, even though he was a hostage in a Ravenna court, Attila the Hun, when he was prisoner or a hostage, he noticed the Roman officials, amongst the Roman officials, he noticed there is a type of corruption is happening where money was taken from the treasury. And Attila the Hun, he promised himself that when he becomes a person in power, he will deal fairly with his fellow subjects. Now, whether he did that or not, that's a different for another day. But he rejected the notion of corruption, even though we understand Attila the Hun to be a barbaric person. But we need to look more into his life. Machiavelli, on the other hand. So throughout history, many intellectuals dealt with corruption or theorized about it in a way or another. Even Machiavelli, as I mentioned, had a low opinion of republics. Any country that is a republic, he had a very low opinion in it. Why? Because he considered them even more corrupted than any other regimes. So you could have a normal regime, but when you have a republic, in the eyes of Machiavelli, he says it is more corrupted. And according to him, corruption, which is quite interesting because Machiavelli is known for his art of war, he says that corruption leads to, and pay attention to these things which are quite interesting, he says it leads to, one, moral degradation, which means that if people morally degraded, and there's degradation happening in morality, then pretty much everything falls. Because the thing that keeps me and you together is the fact that I have morality, you have morality, and we deal with each other based on that fact. When there's a moral degradation happening, then the system falls apart. So he says this is one effect of corruption that happens in republics. Two, he says, bad education. Obviously, when the system is corrupted, you don't assume that there will be good education. There will be really bad education. And three, he says, and bad faith. You know, because if I am corrupted and dealing in corruption, in who do I have faith? In God? Obviously not, because if I have faith in God and I am a practicing Christian, a practicing Jew, practicing Muslim, or even a practicing Hindu, and I'm dealing in corruption, then obviously I am not what? I'm not having faith, because my faith should tell me that this is wrong, should not be done. So these three levels, Machiavelli says, affects a republic and becomes more corrupted, be it through the fact that it is moral degradation, bad education, or bad faith. which is quite interesting, quite true, if we look at how corruption is. And these are the fundamental basics of human rights, that, you know, we need to live in a society where morality governs everything, where there's good education and people with intact faiths. But corruption deprives me and you of such a society. Now, let us take a break. Don't go anywhere, and we will come back.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are still listening to the program for humanity. Now, previously, we were talking about the fact that the notion of corruption was on the minds of those who are educated philosophers, great thinkers. And on the other hand, even diplomats or lawyers. For example, Francis Bacon was known for both receiving bribes and taking them. He reached the highest position in England, and he was caught in many as 28 cases of accepting a bribe and defending himself before the parliament by saying that he usually accepts a bribe from both parties involved and that the dirty money therefore did not affect his decision. So even though he was a lawyer in a high position and he's in a sensitive position, but he was accepting bribes from both parties that were presented to him, and he says, well, it did not affect my my decision. How is that possible? And the parliament did not accept those arguments that he brought forward and sent him to jail, where he spent only a few days and he was able to bribe the judge himself. What kind of corruption is that? I mean, it can't get worse than this, where you have to bribe your way out of jail and accept bribe from other parties. And you can see how society gets corrupted and how society loses its essence when it comes to human rights, where I can see that the court system is corrupted, the police system is corrupted, the political system is corrupted. What chances do I have in getting a fair trial, for example? What chances do I have in opening an honest business? What chances do I have, for example, in maintaining my livelihood when everything is corrupted, when the system is corrupted? So it undermines the fundamental basics of human rights. And like I said, as we will look into it, God willing, inshallah, in further details, sometimes we could be among the corruptors without realizing. And we said many times that the Quran gives examples of corruption. Sometimes even a word that is said, or a wrong witness that you give, a wrong statement that you give, to whether for your benefit or for the benefit of others, that is not true, it could be a form of corruption. So we have to be very careful when it comes to the notion of corruption, when it comes to our communities, our families, our communities, and our societies, and our country, or globally, because we can't be self-centered and only think about ourselves and our country. We have to look at the bigger picture, that we live in a bigger family. Humanity is just one big family that takes its root from two parents, from our Adam and Eve being our father and our mother. So we need to look out for everyone. So we need to be very careful when it comes to bribery, because it takes the rights of other people. Let's leave the topic up to here, and I hope that you stay with us, and we will continue talking about it in episodes to come. Until then, take care of yourselves. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. فبهم نرجو
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.